All right, I'm going to call into session Reedley Planning Commission special meeting of Thursday, January 22nd, 2015. We're going to go ahead and say the Pledge of Allegiance, so let's go ahead and stand up and salute. Face the flag, ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for being here. We're going to go ahead and do a roll call. So, Ellen, could you take control of that, please?
Sure. Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutierrez? Commissioner Hudson? Commissioner Perez?
Here.
Chairman Custodio?
Here. And now we've come to the portion of our meeting where we have the ability, or the public has the ability, to have a public comments. Provides an opportunity for the members of the public to address the Planning Commission on items of interest to the public within the Commission's jurisdictions that are not already on the agenda. Is there anyone that would like to make any comments? John? No? Okay. I'm going to close that. And now we're into the section of consent agenda from our previous special meeting of January 8th, 2015. Did everyone have time to review the minutes? Any questions? Okay, so because of that, I'm recommending an approval. So we need a motion to approve.
Make a motion to approve.
We have a move.
A second.
We have a second. Could we get a roll call, please?
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Chairman Custodio?
Yes. All right. So now I want to take a couple minutes so we can go get some dinner.
Yeah, go grab
and
some
we're going to sit back down, and then we're going to listen to Kevin give this awesome workshop presentation on subdivision of land.
Oh, it's going to be riveting.
Awesome. Go ahead. I drank two cups of coffee before I came, just in case.
You probably don't want any hot
dogs. You know, most people think that just because Martin and I own that place, we eat there all the time. We don't.
What is Alan?
Yes.
Please?
Yes. What do we have here?
Oh, we have a pizza margarita and the work.
And the works. All right, you guys, come on.
Go
ahead. First.
Ladies first. Go ahead.
Come on, jump in.
Thank you.
I haven't had the margarita. Me either. No.
Actually, dumb. This was a customer request.
Really? Oh, thank you.
You see it in a lot of places, but we have just not tried any specialty pizzas with
that. This is a margarita.
This is a margarita.
Oh, okay.
So it's basil, mozzarella, tomato. Yeah, it's very good.
Healthy.
And that was kind of our reason for doing it.
So, nice guy, I'm good. So I was a little mortified when I ordered the margarita and I wasn't asked salt or no salt. But
Martin can't do that. Yeah, you're a funny man. Over the Christmas holiday? Fun.
It was, you know, I was like the sous chef thing, and so I chopped all the pistachios and chocolate.
Nice.
And so, yeah,
nice. Kevin? The other specialty pizza I really like is the gourmet chicken. Why? Because you can do Alfredo sauce or pesto, and I like the pesto. But it's just something he used to make for Jessica and I, and Jessica said, Dad, why don't you put that on the menu?
Yeah.
So that's been a good one.
Well, I want to thank Kevin, Ellen, and the staff for providing and dinner. So
it was a joint effort.
Thank you.
I did kind of the choices, so I just was the delivery boy. So
awesome. Thank you.
Nice.
So Ellen, if you could kind of have to drop that screen. The commission, you do have the same commission as the screen.
And for the benefit of our visitor tonight, this is another workshop. As the commission knows, staff does provide workshops on a regular basis. We do that in anticipation of projects coming up that you may or may not have seen, or a particular topic that's coming up that you may or may not have seen for either some period of time, and it's just kind of a refresher. Or, you know, we've done, you know, workshops on the general plan, about CEQA, about kind of all kinds of topics. And so this evening, one of the things we're going to talk about is the subdivision of land, how that occurs, walk you through a process, and then at the end there'll be a test, just like always. I guess my goal, to be frank with you, is that by the end of this evening, you are probably going to know more than 75% of the civil engineers that we deal with as to how you subdivide land. And it's a rather kind of interesting process. It's got a lot of unique twists to it. It's kind of a animal onto itself, if you will. So basically, when we talk about the subdivision land, the kind of body of law that we refer to is the Subdivision Map Act. It's Government Code 66410 through 66499.58. But the real essence of what we want to talk to you tonight about is what's called a legal lot of record versus a tax parcel. We want to talk to you about parcel maps versus subdivision maps, about lot line adjustments versus mergers. There's something called a one-lot condo map, and it's the division of airspace. We'll kind of breeze through that quickly. Reversion of acreage, corrections and amendments to maps, tentative versus vesting maps. We want to talk to you about the life of a map, how long it's good for, what a final map is, what it looks like. We want to talk to you about dedications, easements, and covenants. And hopefully all that will make some sense when we're all done. But really, that is kind of the breadth of how land is subdivided. And that's very important because you had one map that came to you last time, and that was really the subdivision of land, really for the purpose of finances. You're going to get another map that's going to come to you that is establishing a legal lot of record because somebody created a tax parcel.
Say that again.
You are going to get a map that's going to come before you to create a legal lot of record, as opposed to a tax parcel that was created. It's completely different things. Okay?
You're going to go over that, right?
I'm going to go over all of this stuff for you. And it's living glory. How's that? Okay, so I tried to make this as simple as I could. So you have parcel A is the blue block. If I wanted, and I'm kind of going to do this in a story format, you know, I really like my kids. And so I decide that, you know what, I'm going to gift them half of my property, and they're going to get to grow up on it. That gift is not a subdivision of land. It's for tax purposes. It's a line. I take a legal description down to the county recorder, and I go, hey, this is a tax parcel. For tax purposes, my kids get to live on that half of the property. But I didn't legally subdivide it. If I owned a great big parcel, I owned a great big farm, hypothetically, and Dawn came to me and said, hey, you know what, Kevin? I want to lease 10 acres because I want to grow cardoon on it. I say, no problem. So because I'm a big business, I own 60 acres of land, I go, you know what, Don, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to create a tax parcel. So this will be yours. You can farm it. all the cardoon you want. Have a good day. I'm going to charge you a lease. And you know what? What I'm going to do is I'm going to create that tax parcel, and the taxes that you would pay, property taxes that you would pay as part of that tax parcel, you pay. But I've created a tax parcel. I've not legally subdivided the land. I was going to tell Ron he's going the wrong way. The food's up there. But I can tell where he's headed. So it's really important to understand if we have a legal lot of record or tax parcel. Tax parcel is not a subdivision of land. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's kind of the middle block. So if I do a tax parcel, at the end of the day, I still have block parcel C, which is still a blue block. But if I legally subdivide it through a vehicle called a parcel map, and I actually create two legal lots of record, then the only way to make those two legal lots of record, which is parcel A and B,
mm-hmm.
whole, is to merge them. And that's a whole process unto itself. But it's really, really important. So when you start selling land, there's chain of title. Those are just technical terms. So if, like, for example, you were buying a new house, your escrow company can say, oh, we're concerned about the chain of title. That means who owned it, how is it legally subdivided, and was it legally subdivided? Hey, Ron, food's on the corner.
Thanks.
And you didn't miss anything.
Yeah, excuse me. I just wanted the record to reflect that Mr. Ron Hudson is present, 515.
So there's a process we go through to create the separation of land or the legal subdivision of land. There's also a process we go through to put it back together. In this case, the way you would separate it, because it's just two parcels, is by what's called a parcel map. Make sense so far? So take the next step, parcel map, which you saw. A parcel map by law, by the Subdivision Map Act, is defined as, it's actually five or less, or four or less, lots. So I own a big farm, and I have three kids, and I decide, you know what, I'm going to parcel it off. I'm going to give a legal lot of record to each of my children. We would do that by a parcel map. Where you see parcel maps very common tend to be in commercial development. So I have a 5-acre commercial. You know what? I'm going to cut it into two or three pieces because I'm going to sell off part of it. You know, part of it is going to go to, you know, Toys R Us because Toys R Us wants to buy a piece of my 5 acres to put their land on or their business on. Or, you know, whether it be a Chevron station or something like that. Make sense? Once we get above five, and as you can see by the screen, beyond five, doesn't make any difference what it is, it's considered to be a subdivision.
So even if it's a family land and there's seven kids and you want to divide it within seven of them, five or more, it's considered a subdivision?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the process is kind of the same.
Mm-hmm.
In that, and we'll talk about it later when we get to process about tentatives and finals and what they mean. So the process is kind of similar, but when we talk about like a commercial development cutting off a piece for financing purposes, or he's cutting off a piece of his 5-acre development to sell it to somebody, that's what typically would be as a parcel map. Subdivisions, you're going to see a big subdivision coming to you. And it's going to be a subdivision because it's coming in kind of, there's a commercial piece that's only three or four pieces. But it's got a residential piece that's five or six. And it's got a single family subdivision that's about 120. So that's what created the map, the subdivision map, the need for the subdivision. So it's just based on numbers. Now, just kind of as a sidelight, just a wee bit more detail, just because if you ever hear these kinds of things, you'll know what they mean. If somebody says 4x4, that's a bad thing. Okay, 4x4 is illegal under the law. So to skirt a subdivision, what you legally can't do is I can't take 40 acres and cut it up into four pieces, and then take each one of those pieces and cut it up into four more, and then cut each one of those and cut it up into four more. So when you, if you ever hear the term 4x4, that's a bad thing. You just know right then and there what you've done is you've really usurped the law by using a consecutive series of parcel maps when you really should have just done a subdivision map act. Okay? So we see subdivisions primarily in the arena of residential, 100-lot residences, single-family residence. Blossom Trail, Todd Barsoom's down on the floor, that's what I call it. I can't remember the name. King's River, yeah, something or other. So those are typically maps that you've seen. Okay? Another way to talk about mapping is what's called lot line adjustments. So somebody walks in and says, hey, you know what? I've got four parcels, and you know what? I want to rearrange those four parcels because Payless Shoes doesn't need all of number two. They really are looking for number one in size. And so we say, hey, sure, no problem. So a lot of times what you'll see is somebody will do a parcel map or subdivision map where they'll subdivide the land legally, create legal lots of record, but they may not be the right size. So now we have to shift them around because somebody bought a little bit more, a little bit less, you know, whatever the case may be. So we do those through lot line adjustments. And so the general rule of thumb with the lot line adjustment is if you start with X, you end with X. So you start with 4, you end with 4. You start with 8, you end with 8. And I made that second box because you can see the variety of configurations is completely different than what you see on the left-hand side of the screen. But again, it meets the general rule. You started with 8, you ended with 8. The only catch to this is you cannot create a lot which does not meet the minimum standards of a zone district or a non-conforming lot. So let me talk about that for a second. So if you were going through this and the zoning code said that in a commercial zone district, the property must be a minimum of 50 feet wide. So you couldn't start with 8, end with 8, and have one that's 40 feet. It's got to meet whatever the code requires as minimum lot sizes in that zone district. So that's how the state law then gets tied to the Reedley Municipal Code. Make sense so far? Mm-hmm. Okay. So now you know more than most civil engineers know. And we're just at the beginning. So condominium maps refer to a division of airspace. So basically, you could get a map that's just a box on a piece of paper. I know, you kind of go like, well, I literally scratch my head and go, okay, so how does that work? So the map is being legally subdivided into one lot condominium. Okay, it's literally a box on a piece of paper. Now, the key to that is it's common ownership. So everybody who buys or takes up airspace is partial owner in that box. So what ends up happening is you have a box, and then you have a tax parcel. Remember, we just talked about tax parcels inside. So I build my house in that, or a condominium in that box, and I am part of common ownership. For tax purposes, I pay the property taxes on my little box. But I pay a homeowners association t- to keep up all the landscaping or the fencing or the roads, because I have a common interest inside the box. So that's kind of how condo maps work. Kind of interesting. I don't know that we'll ever see one here, but they're just kind of fascinating because they're completely different than what we typically think. You know, you look at a subdivision map, it's got streets, it's got lots, it's got easements. Here, somebody delivers you a box and you just go, I got a box on a piece of paper, what am I supposed to do with it? They're actually dividing airspace. Airspace can be divided horizontally as well as vertically. Horizontally as well as vertically. So, if you take your box and you put a building and you divide it vertically, three doctor's offices, you've divided the airspace vertically, and each of the doctors pays property taxes on their 1,000 square feet, but they share one-third of all the costs associated with whatever occurs in that box. Now you take the box, it's divided in thirds, flip it on its end. So Dr. A has first floor, Dr. B has second floor, Dr. C has a third floor. Still inside the box, their footprint is what they're taxed on, but all three layers pay one-third into the commonality of the project inside the box. Make sense? So now you probably really know more than most civil engineers. Okay, just kind of for fun, I threw this in there. There's something called reversion of acreage. So, you know, we talk often about creating things, meaning we're creating legal lots of record, we're changing legal lots of record through lot lines adjustments, we're merging parcels together to make, you know, two parcels one. But there is a process to undo all of that. So somebody comes before you and says, hey, I want to do a tract map. And you say, great, we approve it. And for a variety of reasons, whatever they may be, a couple of years go by and the guy, the developer or the owner, or the developer goes under and the owner's sitting there with like these legal lots and he doesn't know what to do with it. He goes, you know what? I do not want to subdivide my land. I want it back the way it originally was. There is a process to, if you will, undo or unwind all that. It's called the reversion of acreage. And it's, you know, it's subdivided real property, reverted back to its original condition and ownership. And there's a process that you go through to do that. And I threw that in just because I wanted you to see that there's a way to undo things that get done. Doesn't happen very often, and there's a, kind of a variety of reasons why it would happen, but generally speaking, it's very, very rare. We're going to talk about corrections just real briefly.
Can I ask you for clarification?
Oh, please.
So what you're saying is when you divide land for a developer, he develops it, and then something transpires a few years later, someone else purchases the land. If they want to revert to a different situation, there's a process to go through to make it not these new lot sizes, but the ones he intends.
Did I understand that? No.
Okay.
So, if when somebody comes in and does a tentative tract map,
mm-hmm.
that has and or goes through a final map, legally subdivides the land, but years go by and I'll just make up a story for you. The developer goes under. And the landowner says, you know what? Okay, I thought this was going to be subdivided. I thought the developer was going to end up buying the land for me. What I got doesn't work. And you know what? I don't want to develop the land. I don't want to sell it anymore. I just want to go back and plant almonds because I can make a lot of money, or grapes. So how then do you undo the approvals? Nothing's been developed. Undo the approvals. To do that, you would go through a reversion of acreage.
That's if nothing was developed.
If nothing was developed. Conversely, if Dawn sold me 10 acres, I went through a tract map, I went through a final map, and I built three homes. I can't undo.
Okay.
Now, okay. I could sell to Ellen mm-hmm. the remaining lots. And Ellen could say, hey, you know what? These lots are too big. You know, this guy thought he was going to sell 10,000 square foot lots. And you know what? I'm not going to do that. I want to sell 5,000. So she has some options. She could do some lot line adjustments, right? She may end up having to amend the tract map. She may have to do another parcel map because she did all these lot lines adjustments and then figured out she was four short, so she has to do a parcel map. But once you start down a road and put a stick in the ground, reversion doesn't work. Does that make sense? Did that answer your question? Cool. Corrections, and we'll talk a little bit more about corrections in a minute, but basically, you know, somebody walked in with a tract map and they said, hey, you know what? I went to do the final map, and when I started all my lot closure calculations, I figured out I could put one more lot on. Oh, you want to make a correction of the map? No problem. Here's how you do it. Gee, the angle of the street was this. I want to move it because I need to do this. So minor corrections to your maps can be made through a correction process. And that, again, is outlined in the code. You want to amend the code. Typically, that or amend the map. So typically, that's done by ordinance. We don't really have anything yet in our ordinance that clearly defines how amendments are made. Typically, in most jurisdiction, a minor amendment would be, you know, basically the map stays the same, the circulation stays the same, but gee, you could squeeze in one more lot, or gee, the knuckle on the cul-de-sac changed a little bit, or the entrance moved, you know, off of an arterial 10 feet to the north or whatever. Kind of minor. Doesn't really change the lotting pattern. So that's a key phrase, lotting pattern, and or circulation pattern. Number of lots is a good standard that's typically used. So now that I've filled in on kind of all the different things that you know, basically creating legal lots of record, to just kind of a fundamental understanding of parcel maps, subdivision maps, how you can create things, how you can make them go back to their original condition. Let's talk about the process itself. Generally speaking, it is always a tentative map followed by a final map. So in the tentative map arena, basically, what they are is they're typically prepared by an engineer. They are not technically correct. They give you a general idea of what the lotting pattern is, what the streets are, general ideas about easements, those where they're going to take access on and off of major streets. And it's approval lies with you, the Planning Commission. So I walk in, and I'm Mr. Developer, and I go, here's my tentative tract map. It says tentative tract map across it. It gives some basic information, lots, ownership, APN numbers. It draws out the lots, and it says, here it is. And I'll show you actually one in a minute so that you'll see what the difference is between a tentative map and a final map. Sorry, I got ahead of myself there for a second. Within the tentative map process, there's something called vesting, and this is really important to understand because this will come before you. Vesting is, I always describe it as two things. It is a subdivider or a developer demonstrating to you that they are ready to develop. They're ready to go tomorrow. What they get in return by their readiness is what's defined, and there's a legal term called vesting. Vesting memorialize a moment in time for which all standards will apply. Okay? It memorializes in time the applicable standards that will apply. So what does that mean? That means that whatever the standards that are in place today will stay in place. Specifically, hey, you've got a vesting map that got approved, that got accepted today. Tomorrow, the city changes its approach standards for single family. They don't have to comply with that approach standard that's changed because they have vesting rights based on the standards at that moment in time. Recently, we talked about development impact fees, right? We have development impact fees. That's a great example. We have development impact fees that are in place today. A month from now, and disclaimer, disclaimer, don't quote me, those double. They won't, but for my story, they double. Because he has vesting rights established, he will only pay those fees that were in place the time his vesting was established. He doesn't get hit with the doubling of impact fees. That's just a really kind of good example. But if the city changes any of its general plan policies, if the zoning ordinance changes, if greenhouse gas emissions standards change, whatever changes, he kind of creates some immunity from all of those things. He will be evaluated, his project is evaluated, and he's established that moment in time. Now, what the city gets back is his readiness to begin immediately. So I think, generally speaking, that's my personal opinion. It's sort of in the MAP Act, but it's really, that's what the city gets when you get vesting. He's ready to go. We're freezing a moment in time for him to move forward and develop it. It provides surety for him. He doesn't have to worry, well, you know, I'm not really sure about my project, so I don't have to worry about development impact fees for 5 years if they go up or go down, whatever the case may be. So it's something that's really, really important with respect to the law. Okay, let's talk about how long is the life of a tentative tract map. By law, for the most part, it follows an initial life of 2 years and a one-year extension. Pretty much it. There is a caveat that says an additional 36 months can be granted if the subdivider goes out, and this is the actual dollar amount that comes out of the code, $236,790. If he has spent that amount on off-site, non-project-related public improvements, then he just gets an extra 36 months.
Off-site?
Off-site.
Sidewalk?
Thing. No.
Okay.
So say, for example, one of his conditions was put in a street light at G and 8th.
South and Reed, there you go.
South and Reed. If he spent $236,790 in that amount or in excess of putting that in, it's unrelated to his project in and of itself, then he just got himself 36 months.
Okay.
So to put in the pads, to create the street improvements that are directly related to his project?
No.
Nope. Go ahead, Pete.
Is the initial life of the map apply to the tentative and the vesting map?
Yes. So
both.
Vesting, it makes no difference whether it has the term vesting. I mean, it is a tentative map.
Oh, okay.
The addition of the word vesting simply memorializes that moment in time.
Okay.
But it's still a tentative tract map. It has initial life of 24 months per the code. A one-year extension thereafter, and then 36 months. So let me share two other things with you before we kind of wrap up kind of the idea of vesting, of the life of the map. So are you kind of wondering where the 236,790 came from?
No.
Okay.
I'm kidding. No, go ahead.
So, not a problem. I always thought...
Kevin's
so,
like, oh, you ruined my story.
No, it's actually kind of interesting. So one of the things that's really interesting about the Subdivision Map Act is if you ever read it, and trust me, please do not read it. Oh, go help yourself.
Yeah, that's more.
Yeah, there's plenty more.
Anybody want any more?
No.
Should I just bring it up from here?
If you
like. In case anybody wants some?
It is absolute...
Yeah, bring it over here.
Unlike other pieces of law... whether we're talking about CEQA or planning law, it is not orderly. Meaning there's bits and pieces of parcel maps all over the place or subdivision. And the reason that that is because whenever there's legislation change to the MAP Act, they just keep tacking it on to the end. When I first started a couple years ago, that dollar amount was $185,000. And all they've done is, oh, it's just 15% every couple years. They'll throw 15% on, and I don't know why, but that's what they—that's the way this piece of legislation works.
It's so 15% every year.
It's every couple years they'll raise it 15%. Now, I'll also go one step further. We have a spreadsheet that we keep, Ellen and I, and it has the life expectancy of all maps. So any track map that we've had, I can tell you when it's about to die, if you will. And what has happened is a couple years ago, during the Great Depression, the legislation, the California legislators basically wrote two provisions in at two different times, which extended the life of the map for 1 or 2 years. Depending on when the map was approved, the legislature stepped in and lengthened that initial in 1 year.
The current maps?
Current
or
current maps.
Anything that came on board or both?
No. It was a very, if the map was approved during a very specific window. Okay. Then it got an extra year or two or three depending on the pieces of legislation.
And all that went with it.
So if your map was about to expire on June, 2015, if it was approved in a particular era, if you will, or window, then it got an extra 2 year extension. So, and if you're ever interested, and I can show you that, it's pretty boring, but that's just kind of a interesting piece to it. The real caveat and the kicker to a final map is that it must be approved prior to the expiration of the tentative. So within those 3 years, basically, your final map has to be approved. And when your final map is approved, that legal subdivision of land creates 3 more years in which, in that 3 year period, you must do something.
We approve that? We approve the final map, or does that, is that city
council? That will, actually, that will go on to city council. You don't approve it, only the council does. Okay? So that's kind of how maps work. Whether we're talking about a parcel map or a final map, a parcel map or a subdivision map, you still have tentative, you have final. The tentative map that you approved the other day, the subdivision of the two pieces, they've already contacted us and said, we will bring in the final map, we will bring it in, we'll pay you your fees, and then we will look at it from a very technical perspective. Make sure everything works from an engineering perspective, and then presuming that is, then like everybody in the world signs off on it. And I'll show you that in a minute, what it actually looks like, and then it'll actually get recorded down to the county. When it's recorded at the county, then and only then do you have a legal subdivision of the land. Okay? So far, so good?
So okay. just so I see the sequence, 24 months.
Plus a year.
Possible.
Plus a year.
Where's the year?
So you have 24 months.
Right under the 24 months, right?
The 1 year extension.
And then you get a 1 year extension, so you're up to 3.
Oh, here, I see. Okay.
Then if you spend a lot of money, you could get another 3.
You can get another 3 years.
Right. So you're up to 6.
So you're up to 6.
Some got 7, 8, 9. because of legislative act.
Wow.
Now, does the vesting stay in place?
Yes. So, it's our perspective that one of the things that we would say is, let's say you walked in with the vesting, 36 months goes by, and you didn't do anything. So, you know what? If you want to file a final map, we don't have any problems with that. We're not going to make you start over, go through a whole process to get back to the same thing, and all we've done is taken the word vesting off. What we would say is you've lost your vesting rights. Prior to this last passage of legislation, I had actually sent out a letter to all active subdivisions that were in our hands and said, you have one, you know, your map is about to expire. According to the Subdivision Map Act, you must have your map approved prior to the expiration of your tentative, otherwise you're going to lose all your vesting. So the city actively lets people know. We don't just, you know, oh, we're waiting for your vesting to go away. You know, out of courtesy, we let them know what's going on. Okay, let's talk about final maps. Final maps basically are the technical component of subdividing land. So an engineer will mathematically do what are called closure calcs. The closure calcs mean that he sticks his finger in the land and he measures the line to where it comes back to the same point that he stuck his finger in. So it's a legal lot. Does that make sense? Legal lot of record. Closure calcs. So every lot has to mathematically close. That's the technical term to it. And he'll give us a list and say, here are all the closure calcs for every single lot. And he'll give us a bunch more information that's very detailed. It's got to be, is up on the screen, it's got to be prepared by a licensed engineer. It's got to be technically correct. In order to move forward, we would always ask for a subdivision agreement. The purpose of the subdivision agreement is to, again, memorialize conditions. But more importantly, a developer has one of two options. They can do all the street improvements on their dime, which very rarely ever happens, right? Or that agreement lays out the bonding. So we can say, hey, you know what? If you're going to do, and they'll give us engineering estimates, hey, if we tell you got to put 1,000 feet down G Street, they will have an engineer calculate out the cost of what that road improvements on G Street is. They will give us a bond in that amount. And the reason the city requires that is because the guy goes belly up or doesn't do it, or he builds all his houses and walks away. Hey, tough, not my problem. Then the city has a mechanism through that bond. We call the bond, we can get the work done. So it's a little bit more of a technical agreement. It's a little bit more technical, making sure the lots are closed. It's kind of the real subdivision of land. It is approved by the council. Once council approves it, which is approving the subdivision agreement, accepting all the bonds, signing off, et cetera, et cetera. Then we take it down, we get it recorded. And when we record it, it extends the life of the map. Extends the life of the map for 36 months. So in that 36-month window, they have to do something. Put up one house, that's all it takes. And then you can extend it. Now, that being said, there's all kinds of fun games that you play with stuff like this. So what you do is you bring in a map, it's 100 lots. You say you come in for 24 months and about you get your 1 year extension, right? And you're about 6 months in. The first thing you do is you walk in, you knock on my door and go, Kevin, I want to do a final map on 10 lots. And I go, hey, no problem. Because what does that do? The minute he gets his final map in, by the time the mother tentative map expires, he just breathed 36 months into his final map. And his tentative.
Say that again. Now.
Okay, so basically, if you take, so you basically have a 100-lot subdivision. And you know you can't do it 100 lots in 36 months, right? Or, you know, you know you can do your final map. You can get it done in that 36 months. But, you know, how do you, you know, you're not going to get it completely built out. And you don't want to have to spend all the money on the 100 at one time. So what a developer will do is, so I got 100 lots. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come in at 36 months, right? So that's the life, which is 24, and halfway through. It takes 6 months to get your final map approved, right? So he's in that last 6 months of his window of life, he's going to come in and he's going to file a final map on 10 lots. The reason being, the minute that final map is approved, it just gave him life over and above for another 36 months. Because the minute the rest of the final map's good, he's good. Does that make sense? So when the final map gets approved,
so at
36, he just bought 36 months.
And how did he buy the 36? Because?
Because the minute you do a final, if he did, because the minute you do a final map, right, you get 36 months, period.
Oh, I see. The other.
Okay. Exactly. So
the 36 that was hanging out there.
No. He gets 36.
Plus another 36 after.
He files the map.
Yeah.
He gets 36 more.
Regardless of how many
acres
he
changed.
So
what? Exactly. So he has two options.
Because
he,
it's a part, even. It's still part of the map.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm trying to...
The map didn't change.
No, because it's a matter of time.
Right.
So this is the really confusing part. Hmm. So he gets 36 at 24, 20... So at 30 months he comes in. He, on the 36th month, last day, he has his final map approved. That final map is good for 36 months thereafter, right? 3 years.
But he has to develop something.
He has to develop something.
Something.
So as long as he develops one house, he's good. But in that 36 months, he gave life to his tentative.
Yeah.
So now what happens is he comes back and he does another 20 lots.
Okay.
36-month extension. Guess what? He just breathed life into that tentative.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that this is important...
Including the vesting and all.
Including the vesting. And the reason that this is important is because you can make, if you play it right, and if you really know how to do this stuff, you can make a vesting map last about 20 years.
Yeah.
That's if the council approves it. If he comes back with the final map and says, I'm going to do 10 houses or whatever it is, if they approve it, it's good. But how about if they say, no, you have to do 20?
They can't.
Okay.
Okay, well, let me rephrase that. They can. There are very specific findings that would have to be made in order to deny that. And quite frankly, it would be... very difficult to make those findings for which you could say no, because they have the legal right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
They have the legal right.
It's legally implanted in the map proceeding process. So.
So that's
that. Let me be absurd as I normally am. You come in and say, "I'd like to, at the 30-month deal, I want to develop 1 acre."
1 acre, one lot.
One lot.
Okay.
And then I still breathe life?
Absolutely.
Yeah. If it gets approved, well, the majority of the time it gets approved, mm-hmm, because of it's in the law.
So actually, you're not being that absurd. Because, quite frankly, what the city would say is one lot's ridiculous. Really? Mm-hmm. Now, if you're smart enough to know how to play this game, what you do is you come in and you go, okay, in this market, in all reality, I might have one start a month.
Right.
So I'm coming in for 12.
You tell, yeah. Mm-hmm.
15.
So it might not be absurd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's the way, that's how that gets played, because you remember how I told you time is the one thing that developers, okay, mm-hmm. this developer, time is the most critical. The longer he can hold on to that vesting moment,
right.
See, now he's extended that time. So in most cities, I mean, even in this city, we periodically go through development impact fee studies and update those. Or we do general plan amendments. Or we change the zoning. Time. He wants to hold on to that moment in time. So that those standards, that moment in time in which his map was approved, is held up. Make sense? So again, that's why it's not about money. It's about time. And it's more about the standards. See, everybody goes, oh, it's development impact fees. No, 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 it's not. If the city, and I'll give you a good example, if you look at old county lots, the county tilted their properties to drain to the back. Now, a city comes in and we say, no, 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 you can't tilt it to the back. You tilt it to the front. Because we want it to drain into the storm drain. And, you know what? You're not on septics. You're on sewer, which is gravity. So it's got to be tilted to the front. So imagine, what would a 30-lot subdivision look like if half the lots were tilted backwards, the other half were tilted forwards?
I wouldn't want to be in the middle.
I wouldn't want to be on either end. But, you know, you get the point.
It creates a little river through the back.
A river of what?
A river of what?
Okay, how are we doing so far?
I have one question. Sure. How does that impact the financial part of the of their loan? When and will they breathe that kind of life into that, Brad? Because normally they release based on certain percentage of completion. That's how they release the money.
Right.
So will they go that long?
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
So, because remember, if you did 10 lots, you sell out 10 lots. Then you go back and you finance another 10 lots. Mm-hmm. Then you go back and finance another.
The financing separate. Yeah.
And again, it's not about financing. It's about time and fixing things. So he can sit down and go... I'll give you... This is kind of a good example. If you go down Manning, and if you walk down Manning... What you'll notice is all the approaches are very, very long in their angles. Okay? They come right to the property line. Now, the standard is you must have a 4-foot ADA pedestrian place. Okay? So you do that one of two ways. I'm talking kind of in a...
You're talking about no sidewalks, right?
No. Actually, what ends up happening is there's two things that can happen. You can change the standard, which means... You have something that looks like this. This is the approach.
Yeah.
This is the ADA sidewalk. Yeah. Right now, we just have this. Mm-hmm. And so what you do is now what we would normally do is to say, okay, owner, you give us a 4-foot easement. But in order to go from this to this, costs you $800 in cement and labor. You got 1,000 homes. It's $80,000, right? So again, the issue is we have memorialized that moment in time in which a standard that is applicable. The important part, not so much for financing, I mean, it is financing, you're right, Pete, but what it allows him to do is fix his costs. They're known. He can look at that standard and say, every single house that I build will have that approach, or the sidewalk will be so wide, or I need to put in so many street trees because it's this, or, you know, the city has a standard, right? I shouldn't say right now, but the city has a standard that street lights will be every 400 feet. 2 years, we go, oh, you know what? We got high crime. We need better lighting. So we close that gap. We say we want it every 200 feet. Okay, that doubles the amount that he would have to do. But he doesn't have to do it because of that moment in time. Does that make sense?
Here's one.
Oh, thanks.
He's talking too much.
We don't know. We don't want to say that out loud.
Hey, we have a 7:30 game to go to, you know.
Okay, oh, I'll be done long before then.
What about dessert, though?
Okay. So, any more questions about maps before we go into kind of a little bit more detail, literally? Okay. This is something that's really typical. And I showed you this because we're going to talk about the what are called dedications and easements. And we'll finish up with covenants, and we're not far away from kind of being close to the end. So you are going to propose a subdivision that's on Dinube Avenue. Okay? And we're going to say, hey, no problem. We think that's great. And you know what? We're going to look in our book because we have engineering standards to say how wide Dinube is going to be. And so Dinube isn't as wide as it's supposed to be today. So we would say, look, Mr. Developer, you have to dedicate land to the city, no cost. You're just going to give it to us, and you're going to build us a street. It's what we do. Now, let me talk about three kinds of things for you. There's something called the ultimate width. So the ultimate width is basically, in this case, you see where it says city dedication?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not what is being dedicated. Actually, the truth of the matter is that this map, and I cut it out, it's the wrong label. So if you looked at the city standards and it said 110 foot right away, 110 feet, or 106 feet, what they've identified as city dedication is one half of. The ultimate width is 106. What they're identifying, that big thick line, is called a center line.
Center of what?
Center line. So we have something called an ultimate width when we talk about streets, which is right away from one side to the other. We have the center section, the midpoint, the midline of that street. If we have a straight street, it's called the center line. Pretty simple, right? I know the engineers got that one right. Center line, center of the street. But now, there's another term called section line. Section line is because the street's curved. Curvilinear. There's a bend in it. So it can't be the center line, right? Because you're on an arc. So we call it section line. So anytime you hear center line, you know it's a straight street. Okay, so these are all the little tricks. If you hear section line, you know it's a street that's got a curve to it. And then there's the ultimate width. Well, I'm coming to develop on Dinube Avenue, and the ultimate width is not there. So I, as a developer, am obligated and conditioned. We can write a set of conditions that says, you shall dedicate, in this case, 13 feet. Now, I pulled this up because as much as a city dedication is incorrect, it's really should have been city ultimate width half of. It says existing RW, existing right-of-way, from the center line is 40 feet. The developer, it says additional RW. It should have said to be dedicated, and it's 13 feet. Does that make sense? Follow me, Dawn? Okay.
I'm about halfway there.
Okay. So 100.
I need a story. Thank
okay.
you.
So ultimate width, 106 feet. Half of that, because I'm just building on the south side of Dinuba, is 53, right? So that's what it shows up on the map. Existing right-of-way is 40, which means I'm requiring them to give me 13 more feet to make that 53 feet, which is half of the ultimate right-of-way. Got it?
Yeah.
So the 13 feet is the actual dedication that's required. Long story to get to say, you look at the map and it says 13-foot dedication. And the condition will say the developer shall dedicate 13 feet. But you have to understand center section line, you have to understand ultimate width, just to kind of help get you to that place. An easement is different than a dedication. Dedication is primarily used with street right-of-way. But they're what are called easements. Easements are land, part of a legal lot of record, that Ron Hudson owns. That Ron is such a nice guy, he goes, you know what? I am going to let somebody use some of my land at no cost to them. Those easements come in a variety of ways. Now, I'm actually pretty proud of myself because I drew the blue in. Now, Ellen would laugh because she probably knows how to do it. I actually had to I figured out how to make my cursor literally draw along the edge. So that blue line is identified as something called, and you can see it on the left-hand side. It's on lot 24, just above the identifier 24. It says 10-foot P.U.E, public utility easement. So that's public utility easement. And guess what is in that easement? Public utilities. Verizon,
Comcast, PG&E.
Water, PG&E, whatever public infrastructure is going in along there, that's where it goes. Ron owns that public utility easement. But Ron's just such a heck of a nice guy. He goes, oh, public utilities, you can put all that stuff in my front yard.
If I don't, I go to jail.
Regrettably, here's the deal, though. The deal is the easement is already in place before you buy the land, so you really don't get a choice.
That's right. True.
It's a done deal.
It came with baggage.
It came with the land.
There you go.
Now, where you'll see this, and easements are all over. Okay? So I just showed you one that's on Jefferson Avenue. It's a cul-de-sac. But I just was talking a minute ago when we were doing the whole slant of drive approaches. If you go to, what's the name of the place on the corner of Manning and Reed, the gas station?
Valero.
Thanks. If you were to walk along there, all of those drive approaches angle to the blacktop. There could be a pedestrian easement created. It's 4 foot on the back of the asphalt, which says you can't build there, and the purpose of that easement is for people to walk ADA, and we don't walk on an angle through there. It's another kind of easement. Here's an easement. I threw this one up there just to see if I could throw you a curveball. Ron, I'm getting ready for baseball season. Four weeks, pitchers, catchers report. Anyway, there's actually two easements on here. There's an east-west easement, and there's what actually is north-south, the long one, the 30-foot one. So you can see the 8-foot one that's on the northern, well, what would be to the top of the page. That looks to me like some kind of a flood easement that comes into that concrete weir. But then it's a 30-foot easement running north-south. See that? Mm-hmm. If you look all the way on the left-hand side, it says NO1. It's actually 1 hour 50 minutes east. Above that there's an arrow, and then it says 30. Between those arrows is the Alta Irrigation District easement, and then you see that center line running right through the numerical 30 foot. That's actually the 30, that dash line is actually where the pipe is, and inside those arrows is the boundaries of the easement. In Reedley, back in the day, sewer and water ran across the back property line. So there are places in Reedley where Reedley, you know, people have, you know, they gave the city easements. We can walk on, we can legally walk on our onto their property so that we can fix that sewer line.
Mm-hmm. They did that at our home. They moved the fence up to where Alta yep. Irrigation runs the entire mm-hmm. section down Thompson behind our property. Because
yeah.
eventually they're going to subdivide and build back here. But right now there are a few homeowners mm-hmm. who have moved their fence back, knowing that if Alta needs to get there, Alta's coming.
Yeah. So, you know, if you drove down Frankwood, there is a subdivision there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you were walking on the street on Frankwood, north or south makes a difference, but there's about a 10-foot landscaping easement and a brick wall.
Mm.
That land is actually owned by the house.
Right.
They gave that easement. So they're really common. They're all over. And, you know, we don't think about them. We don't see them. We walk over them all the time, but they're there.
And it's to get access to certain whatever it is?
Exactly.
Like Alta Irrigation.
It's been there way before
yep.
your area yeah. developed.
So yeah. what it is the landowner is giving
permission
to recognize, you know, or put in that place that land.
Can you walk on, drive on most easements, or does it depend?
It depends.
Yeah.
And it depends because we're going to do a project with Alta, or there's a project coming, that they have non-reinforced pipe. So we're talking to them now about, okay, so when this gets developed, are you going to require the whole length of the frontage of this property to have non-reinforced, or is it only going to be over the drive approaches that bear the weight? And again, it depends on the easement. So sewer, I mean, most of the time, like the sewer, the water, or Alta, you know, they have really, especially somebody that has their own jurisdiction, if you will, like Alta, they'll say, no, you can't, I mean, all you can do is plant grass or flowers, no trees. A PUE, depending on what's actually there, I mean, you get trees, flowers, all kinds of stuff. Okay, we're almost there. Covenants. Kind of going back to land, there are covenants that get placed on the land for very explicit reasons. And covenants are a vehicle to help recognize something. So you have two pieces of land right next to each other. One is developed, the other wants to develop. And what's the existing? The existing is a medical office. The guy's going to, hey, you know what? I'm going to put another set of docks right next to you. No big deal. Hey, everybody's happy, right? Question is, how do you get across that property line? Legally, you can't do it without some kind of permission. So you heard us already talk to you about cross-access agreements.
Mm-hmm.
A cross-access agreement, and, you know, so you get a kind of better sense of what that is, it's permission between two landowners for pedestrian, vehicular, but it's parking, It's storm drain facilities. It's drainage facilities. I mean, you're conveying water down a valley gutter. You're kind of one hand's telling the other hand, I'm giving you permission to convey that water, and we're sharing the valley gutter. It has to do with utilities, whether it be PG&E, electric, fire, whatever it is. It's access, there's a, for emergency services to come across those property lines. Now, intuitively, we always know that a fire department will go wherever the fire is. And they're not going to think about a property line and the police department and the ambulance services. But it, from a legal standpoint and for liability purposes, it's always important to have those docs in place. Refuge, you could be sharing them. You could be, the truck's going to back across a property line. They pull them out. It moves across the property line. Landscaping, walls. And really any other amenities that we think about or that are conditioned are things that we would put in that cross-access agreement. Parking. Hey, what? Dawn wants to expand her business. Dawn's kind of landlocked. Dawn doesn't have enough parking to meet the code. But you know what? There's an office building across the street that closes at 5 o'clock. And... Dawn is going to, the city says, hey, we understand that, her hours, her busy time, her need for additional parking is not in conflict with the building across the street, so they're going to share parking. So we enter into an agreement, a covenant, that says Dawn and X office are going to share parking, and that's how she's going to satisfy the requirements of the code. We understand that. Navigation easements. So a navigation easement basically is an aeronautics. So basically, we want to make sure we put our navigation easements on property because we want them to know that they're in a noise contour or an approach zone or those kinds of things. So that's kind of a right to farm easement. So basically, I'm buying a subdivision that's right next to a farm that's active. I, as a new landowner, am going to enter into a right-to-farm easement or covenant that says, hey, I recognize that guy's going to do farming. I can't come back at a later date and go, oh, I didn't know he was going to do that, right? So those are all covenants that we enter into. The last one is what's called an irrevocable dedication of right-of-way. So we have a situation where we know that somebody wants to come into the city because we're going to annex them in. But we really, it's really too much to ask for them to put in full curb, gutter, and sidewalk. So because they're not developing the property, but they're kind of next to a property that's going to develop. So we would ask them through a covenant to give us an irrevocable dedication, meaning they're going to dedicate land. They cannot take it back, but they don't have to develop it today. So those are just some examples of covenants. The city, and I want to be really clear about this, the city is always party to those covenants. And the role that we play is simply nothing more than notification. We don't, Dawn and Ron are going to enter into a cross-access agreement because they're right next to each other. They both have dock offices, and they're leasing them out. We think that's wonderful. Have a good day. Charge whatever you want. Flourish. Do your business. We do not want to interfere with that. But we sure want to be party to it. And our acknowledgement is nothing more than, we want to know if you cancel that. If you, for some reason, terminate that agreement, the city wants to know about it. And the city will take action because it is a public health and safety issue the minute that covenant is broken. And there are water lines going across a property line to feed two properties. Because Ron can't get mad one day, go out and cap off on his side of the property line water that goes to you. So that's the surety that the city wants to know about and play a role in. That's all it is. Nothing about how you conduct your business, whatever you do, blah, blah, blah. We just want to make sure that we're notified if there's ever, you know, cancellation of that. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Cool. Okay. So we are really just about at the end. So this is a vesting map. I thought I would kind of end this with, like, real pictures. This is a bona fide vesting map. This is what it looked like. And the things that I can call your attention to are things like, you might notice that it doesn't have the word vesting in it. You might notice, so I'll just tell you. So when I look at this, here are the things that walk through my head. A, it doesn't have vesting. B, what's the time stamp? Sorry, it didn't come out very good, but you can see in the upper right-hand corner that it was accepted on a particular date. It has information about, very general information about the lots. Yes, it did what it was supposed to under the Subdivision Map Act. It has identified every lot. We typically identify those by numbers. What you would see is the last, or the last numbered lot has a circle around it. They didn't do it, but that's okay. Number 30. You see the general lotting pattern. So it's three cul-de-sacs, lots 1 through 4, 29 through 28, face on to Duff. You can see that there's a parcel that is not... that is not part of, that's kind of an old term. It'd be defined as a remainder today, which is that big lot that is what's to the left or backs onto lots 28 and 29. We sort of got some street names there, not real detail, but they're there. We sort of get a little bit, and it's hard to tell, but there's a couple arrows right across the street from the remainder piece that kind of tells us about center line, dedications. It's sort of there, but not in a lot of detail. There's a couple notes here, there. We got a north arrow. We think that's wonderful. You know, it does give us a scale. It's 1 to 60, I think, or 1 to 40. So we're pretty excited about things like that. One of the terms that you could hear very often is the blue border. That's kind of a technical term. The blue border, unfortunately, because this isn't color, isn't blue, but it truly is blue most of the time. And the blue border refers to the area of the map. So if you were to look at the remainder piece, everybody knows, see where that remainder piece is, the backs on to 28 and 27. You see where it kind of comes down to that little point. If you follow that particular line all the way around, it comes back to the same point. That is what is the blue border. Everything inside of that is considered to be the tentative tract map. The county is the one who identifies and assigns the numbers to the map. Little tidbit. Vicinity map, general stuff. Any questions so far? Kind of with me? Remember I said it doesn't have to be done by a licensed engineer. It's conceptual in nature. Remember, those are the things we talked about in earlier about the characteristics of a tentative map. Kind of shows us the lotting pattern, shows us the street configurations, things like that. Cool? This is the first page of a final map. And you can see everybody gets their shot at signing off on these things. So the owner signs off saying, I swear it's true and everything's good. You have a notary. You have a couple acknowledgments. You have the city engineer signing off on the legal subdivision of land, and he's attesting that it's true and accurate and blah, 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 blah. You typically would have somebody like the planning director or community development signing off. Some places actually have the city engineer. Some places will actually have a mayor or a representative of the city council. There's always a slew of owners that will, all the owners sign off. In this case, it was just one owner, if I can read that correctly, which is nice, but every owner would sign off on it. Okay, so you remember how I was kind of spewing all that jargon about legal lots of record and closure and all that mathematical junk that the engineers do? Those two charts on the left-hand side, and I apologize, I could get you the real map if you want it. It's all figures, bearings, minutes, seconds from this place to that place. All of those numbers are very, 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 very important, because what that says is lot 23 is actually lot 23. It's not open. It starts at a point and it ends at that same point. It's closure. But if you look at it, I mean, just visually, you can see every cul-de-sac has a name, every street has a name, every lot, every property line has a dimension, every easement, every dedication has been lined out explicitly. The blue border, you know, is what it is. And you can see it has much greater detail. If you look at the center of any cul-de-sac, they'll show you radii to all of those places. So I think that kind of gives you, you know, it's this versus that.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's what you start with. That gets you through the door, gets you before you. But then to legally get it subdivided, to do that subdivision agreement, this is the requirement, very much about engineering, technical kinds of stuff. So now you know all kinds of, honestly, you've heard tonight, and if you, things that most engineers don't even get. So you're going to be well on the way to understanding when an engineer stands up and talks to you about, well, why do we have to dedicate 13 feet? So you go, well, where's the center line? What's the ultimate width? You know. What do you mean about a blue border? You know what that is. Well, I didn't have to do a subdivision map. I've had that argument already. Well, so that argument, it was actually, well, we're only making 13 legal lots of record. Why do I have to do a subdivision? It's a commercial property. We should do it like a parcel map. No, you can't do 4x4. It's a parcel map. Okay? It's greater than 5. You got to do a subdivision. Commercial subdivision map is really okay. Lot line adjustment. We start with whatever we start with, we end with. And you can't create a legal non-conforming lot. So if the standard width is 50 feet, every lot has to be 50 feet. If you want to buy a piece of property that's been gifted to a bunch of kids, be careful, because there's chain of title to get to legal lot of record. I really used to like my kids, and I legally subdivided the land, but I don't like them anymore. So I want to put it all back to the way it was, so me and my wife can live on the 5 acres because the kids are bums. Okay? You merge the lots together. The key to merging is whatever the land use designation, whatever the zoning is, as long as whatever you started with, it was both residential, it ends with residential, you're good to go. You are going to see a parcel map coming before you. You know, story goes, the guy leased out a property, created a tax parcel, and now the reason we're doing the tentative map is coming before you is because the tax parcel is not a legal subdivision of land. And in order to sell a portion of the bigger piece, they must go through a parcel map, because it's one piece and they're just cutting it, you know, cutting off a little section. Okay, fire away. What questions do you have?
Well,
Have I completely numbed you with this just riveting stuff?
This is great stuff.
Yeah, it was actually very educational. Thank you. I have no questions.
It's what Ellen and I deal with every day when we're talking, not only to just, you know, people call us, what's your land use designation or what's your zoning? So we live and breathe this dream every single day. And after a while, it just kind of comes ingrained in you. But it's really important for the city to make sure that we're making sure that land is being legally subdivided. But it's equally important for you as the private citizen or somebody who's about to buy a piece of property that you know it's been legally subdivided, because you don't want a hole in your property.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Questions? No? All right. Well, thank you for the workshop. It was awesome. Really, really learned a lot.
Good.
Actually, feel really confident.
If you
now that I'm a civil engineer and I can go and, you know, put that on my resume, then I know more than a civil engineer now.
You, trust me. You know what?
Do we get a certificate?
We go get a certificate.
I'll make you a certificate.
Thanks for the food.
Yes, thank you for the food.
If there's any other topics, just let me know. Be more than happy. This will probably similarly get presented to council.
Okay.
And we'll let you know when that happens.
Do you have any reports on planning projects or engineering projects?
The only thing I would say is we are absolutely swamped.
Okay.
Poor Ellen and I are kind of pulling our hair out. The 40-acre project that we've talked about is in. It's tentatively scheduled to come to you in the first meeting in March. So in February, I'll be sitting down with all of you trying to fill you in on where we're at. The triangle, I think I've mentioned to you before, February 11th, I think, we're going to LAFCO for a hearing. And I am working with one of the parties that we're going to be selling the land to begin taking care of the general plan and rezone application to kind of get those things squared away. So that'll be coming to you shortly. You have a tentative track map. A tentative parcel map that'll be coming to you probably, I think, in the next meeting.
Is it the 5th?
That's February 5th, yes.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and go through the future agendas here.
Yeah.
So the 5th, we have mm-hmm. a tentative parcel.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody put that on your calendar. And then you'll let us know when we can meet with you in February for the March 5th date.
And that is a conditional use permit. And a vesting tentative track map, as well as a general plan amendment and rezone. We're trying to get those squared away for you. Ellen is our text amendment guru, and I know she's got one coming before you, and she's working on three or four other ones. Les Schwab, as everybody knows, is in and moving forward very quickly. We've been working on a medical office project. I probably need to give you, Planning Commission, an update at some point, and I probably should do it in a workshop format. I promise to keep it very quick, but on groundwater management. January 1 of this year, the legislation kicked in related to groundwater management and what that means for the future. We have been working with a group of interested parties to see about how we can accomplish the intent of the legislation. So I'll schedule a time in the next two or three meetings to give you that overview. I think, what am I missing?
That's it.
All right, so February 5th. We're on the 19th.
Not at this time.
No, March 5th for sure.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And March 19th, the text amendment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tentatively. All these are, mm-hmm. tentatively.
Yeah, the February 5th meeting was officially posted in the paper in the Exponent today. So that's kind of something else. If we don't have a meeting, if you check the paper, we have those notices to know that it's official. I also try to email you once it's official, just so you guys have some time, but The text amendment is tentative. That's something that I'm going to try to get to and start bringing those before you. But, yeah, the rest of them are pretty official.
All right. Well, does anybody have any questions, concerns, comments? No?
Well, then, 5 o'clock on the 5th, right?
So on the 5th, yes. We'll have our regular monthly meeting on the 5th at 5 o'clock. So I want to move to for a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Okay. Can we do roll call?
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Chairman Custodio?
Yes. All right. Meeting adjourned. Good night.